ब्रह्म श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरितौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे।
Continuing with section 20. We shall therefore strive to accomplish our purpose following the leadership of Govinda, conversant with the science of politics, that personage whose fame hath spread all over the world. For the successful accomplishment of one's purposes, one should ever place Krishna in the van, that foremost of personages whose strength consists in wisdom and policy, and who possesseth a knowledge of both method and means. For the accomplishment of one's purpose, let, therefore, Arjuna, the son of Prita, follow Krishna, the foremost of Yadavas, and let Bhima follow Arjuna. Policy, good fortune, and might will then bring about success in a matter requiring valor. Yeah, so when you're dealing with valor, then it comes out policy, good fortune, and might. So it's like your policy, what you're going to do, your might is what you're going to use, and then your good fortune is what you're going to obtain, what you're going, your goal. You understand? So you have your sambandha, abhideya, and prayojana here. So that, this, yeah. So this will be, we see here, is Krishna is very expert because he has wisdom. Wisdom means it's practical. You know, it does. It has real meaning, real purpose, right? It's not just knowledge that you've observed it, but wisdom will be, it's actually practical. You've used it, it works very nicely. So then Krishna's knowledge, Krishna's policy, he knows the method, he knows the means, right? He knows what you're trying to obtain, how to obtain it. He knows the method, how you'll go about that. Does that make sense? So this means then what Krishna is thinking, that's always the best. That's what Yudhishthira Maharaj is saying. So then what Krishna gives in the Shastras of what is the knowledge, what is your means, what is your method, right? Then that should be followed. That makes sense? Yudhishthira was so successful. Now, can anybody doubt if Yudhishthira was successful or not? Right? No. You understand? The example is so obvious, no one could say, well, kind of, you know. What do you think? Well, he did a good job. Yeah, I guess you could say so. You can't say that. You know, emperor of the world, but beyond emperor of the world of any other emperor of the world. I mean, this is like emperor of emperors of the world, right? He's doing the Rajasuya that only Harishchandra did, right? Out of all these kings that are mentioned in history, only one other king has done that, right? So that means unrivaled emperorship. You know what I'm saying? It means that's emperor of the whole world, not just part of it, or you're the emperor, but they don't actually like it. This is, everybody's happy with it. That makes sense? So he's successful, and so this is his method. Right? His method. Use Krishna's policy, in other words, the directions according to, you know, Krishna. Then the good policy, the fortune that comes from Guru, and then your own endeavor. Does that make sense? So that combination works very well. Yeah? Does that make sense? Yeah? Vaishampayana said, thus addressed by Yudhishthira, the trio, Krishna, Arjuna, and Bhima, all possessed of great energy, set out for Magadha, attired in the garb of snatic Brahmins, of resplendent bodies and blessed by the agreeable speeches of friends and relatives. What are snatics?
Graduated students.
So what will they look like? Yeah, simple brahmanas. But what are some of the things that you'll note that they are?
They're having a bamboo stick.
They're having a stick. That's one of the things. They walk with a stick like that. So they're dressed as brahmins. They move around like that. So it's very simple. So then unassuming... As Brahmins, they can go anywhere at any time. You know, they can meet anybody. So it's actually one of the most advantageous positions to be in, right? Like that. And there's no burden. They're not married, so there's no family difficulties. You only have to think about, you know, gaining of knowledge or accomplishing whatever their purpose is, right? So it's a very good position, like that. So then they went like this. Why would they go like this?
Nobody will suspect them, plus they can go straight to Jarasandha.
Yeah, no one will suspect them, they can go straight into Jarasandha, because if they come as Kshatriyas, then there might be a fight. Right? And Jarasandha can't be defeated in battle, even by the demigods. Therefore, you don't want to fight, you know, meaning, you know, war. Right? Because if you have Arjuna, you have Krishna, you have Bhima, that's an army right there. You know, it's not like you have to worry that, oh, it's only three guys. No, that's a three-man army right there, you know. One's the, you know, 10,000 elephant strength, like that. The other one can fight with 60,000 warriors at the same time, right? And the other one is unlimited, so, you know. So therefore, by this way, then they can go in and approach him personally and then get the agreement of him to fight single-handed combat.
Right?
Not technically, you can say there is Snatika, because Snatika is one who's graduated, basically. So anybody, after graduation, they go through the Sambartana. Then the other one is a snatika, or say one who's bathed. Because in the snatika ceremony, then they're sprinkled with water. They're bathed like that. You know, so just like you say one who's anointed or one who's like that, like the king, he's anointed. That means he was established as king. Because they pour water, they give oil, then they pour water. He's actually bathed for the ceremony. So then it says that, you know, he's sitting there with his hair still wet from the, you know, coronation, yeah. So like that. So they have these different, so then technically any Brahmin who's finished his education and has graduated is a snatika. If he doesn't graduate, he's called a naistika. Right? Because naistika brahmacharis never graduate, because they're always under the direct direction of the spiritual master. But the Upakurvanas, they graduate, so they're still under the direction of the spiritual master, but they're basically on their own to follow it. Like that. Then they can go out and study. You know how you have the you see it in the reflection in the modern, that sometimes between the secondary education and the tertiary education, you can take a year off, and the schools won't complain for going around, seeing, doing, you know, all those things you want to do and see before you actually get down to serious study. So it's the same kind of thing. That principle is there. Because then after they marry, they can still go on pilgrimage, but then they'll go with the wife. You know, so then it's different. Then they go just to the holy places of pilgrimage, and so it'll be religious. Well, when they go beforehand, it's not specifically for religious, it's for knowledge. Right, because the wife will want to go if they're going to different places and bathing in different holy rivers. You know, you'll hear from holy persons at the place. You know, stay a few days, hear from them. That's okay. But they actually go and follow a specific course of study, then that won't necessarily, because the wife may have her own interests. So, therefore, for the husband to do his own, therefore, it's done before he gets married, like that. So, if he's studying under one teacher, there was something he wanted to learn specific from another teacher, he learns that before he's married. Right? Then he gets married. But generally it's already arranged as marriage, you know, upon graduation. Like that. Or it may even be arranged before, but he doesn't have to deal with it. He doesn't interact. There's no interaction. Like that. Does that make sense? So that's it works very naturally, very smoothly, like that. So generally it's not very long, 6 months, a year. Generally, maybe a few years, but you don't want to leave it too long. As Brahmins, it's okay, because a Brahmin technically doesn't have to get married, like that. But the Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, they do. You know, Shudras, never are not grihastas, just whether they have a wife or don't, like that, because they always live in the house. It means those who never leave the house, like that, they're grihastas, technically. So shudras they're not brahmacharis. They're bachelors. Right? They're unmarried grihastas, that's all. But the vaishyas and the kshatriyas, brahmas, they're brahmacharis because they go to the ashram. But the kshatriyas and vaishyas will graduate, will get married. The brahmins may or may not, like that. Does that make sense? So therefore, if they're a little more time studying, no one's going to complain because they'll be in the ashram under the guidance of a teacher. Why we're explaining this is because then some may say, well, why were the Pandavas chastised by Chitrarata for being snatikas? Because the Kshatriya and Vaishya can be snatikas. Generally, they don't. They're not. I mean, they're snatikas meaning they graduate, but they're not classified as snatikas because they're not furthering their knowledge. Right? A Brahmana, he always is studying, always is teaching, so he's still called a snatika even if he does. But snatika would be like he's just qualified. That's why a more mature, a more developed, you know, Brahman who's married, then he'll be called a Shrotriya or a Shrauta or something. He'll have some other qualifications. You know, he'll be known as a scholar, he'll be known as a doctor of Vaidya, or he'll be known as a, you know, grammarian, or he'll be known as a good teacher, he'll be known as, you know, in other words, what occupation specifically within that he takes up. Snataka just means he's now a qualified Brahman that he can now teach. Right? He can go out, do whatever he wants. He's an independent Brahman now. That's what it'll mean. Right? So, but they were Kshatriyas. And it wasn't that they were traveling for knowledge. It wasn't like they were going, you know, ashram to ashram to sit with that. Because then they're still under the direction of the Brahmins, right? Because that was one of the faults. They were traveling. There was no Brahmin in front, right? Kshatriyas have to follow Brahmins. So there has to be a Brahmin in front leading the way. So they didn't have that. So then it's there. So here, because that will come up in the discussion, is how is it that dressed as snatikas, you know, and they're kshatriyas. But they point out kshatriyas can also be snatikas if they're interested in furthering. They have a purpose. So it's not wrong. It generally doesn't happen. You know, but it's not wrong. You know. Possessed of superior energy and bodies already like the sun, moon, and fire, inflamed with wrath at the sad lot of their relative kings, those bodies of theirs became much more blazing. Right? Sun, moon, and fire are always put together because they are all the forms of fire. Like that, you know. So fire is like localized. The sun is then very big and the moon is then the cooling. Right? So here we'll see is like Arjuna, Krishna will be like the moon, Arjuna will be like the sun, and Bhima will be like the fire, right? Because the fire will consume all the energy, enemies, right? The sun is success, you know, that leadership, all those things like that. Or you could take it as Krishna is the sun, Arjuna is the moon, like that, because then the masculine and the feminine aspect of it. The people beholding Krishna and Arjuna, both of whom had never before been vanquished in battle, with Bhima in the van, already ready to achieve the same task, regarded Jarasandha as already slain. For the illustrious pair, Krishna and Arjuna, were masters that directed every operation in the universe, as also all acts relating to the morality, wealth, and pleasure of every being. Right? Because you have Guru and Krishna. So everything is going on because of them. They control everything in the universe. Right? But they come as Krishna and Arjuna, who are worried how are they going to defeat, you know, Jarasandha because he's so powerful and not, you know, it's like Jarasandha breathes because of these two, right? You know. Having set out from the country of the Kurus, they passed through Kuru Jungla and arrived at the charming lake of lotuses. Passing over the hills of Kalakuta, they then went on crossing the Gandaki, the Saranira, the Karatoya, and the Sharkaravarta and other rivers taking their rise in the same mountains. They then crossed the delightful Sharayu, saw the country of eastern Kaushalya. Passing over that country, they went to Mithila, and then crossing the Mala and Charamanwati, the three heroes crossed the Ganges and the Soane, going on towards the east. At last, in other words, they were traveling on the north of the Ganga before that, and so all these rivers coming down from the Himalayas, they were crossing all of those like that, because Ayodhya is to the north. Right? It means like if you're at Allahabad, then you have to go about 6 hours north to get to Ayodhya, you know, because that's where the Sharaya goes through. So like that, and then the Ganges goes down into when it goes into Bihar. Like that. So then I think Varanasi is right on the border of UP and Bihar. Like that. So then it'll continue down, it'll start to turn. So they then crossed and then went down into Bihar. So it's the lower area. At last those heroes of unfaded glory arrived at Magadha, in the heart of the country of Kushamba. Reaching then the hills of Gorata, they saw the city of Magadha. It was always filled with kine, wealth, and water, rendered handsome with innumerable trees standing there. Right? So many trees make the place handsome, right? Not necessarily many tall buildings. Section 21. Right? Prabhupada, when they first gave a plan for the Mayapur project, then it was the big temple immediately, other buildings immediately around, because he said right around, that means the first Prabhupada said there was the temple, the immediate buildings around it were supposed to be, you know, how you say, 4 1,000-foot buildings that were for education, because there's the temple, then the Brahmins. Then you go out like this, you know, that was the method. So then, and then he also had the guest houses behind the temple and that, so... But they packed everything in, and Prabhupada kind of, where's the gardens, where are the trees? You know, that was his first comment. You know, so it's supposed to, because when you hear him talk about Dwarka, they more talk about the gardens and trees and sitting places and ponds with lotuses and stuff like that. Because it's natural, you know, then it'll mention that they have the big mansions and stuff like that. Vasudev said, "Behold, O Partha, the great capital of Magadha, standing in all its beauty, filled with flocks and herds. Its stock of water is never exhausted, adorned also with fine mansions, standing in excellent array. It is free from every kind of calamity. The five large hills of Vaihara, Varaha, Vrishava, Rishigiri, and the delightful Chaitya, all of high peaks and overgrown with tall trees of cool shade, connected with one another, seem to be jointly protecting the city of Girivraja. The breasts of the halls were concealed by forests of delightful and fragrant loharas, having the ends of their branches covered with flowers." It was here, so to be covered with flowers, the ends means that they have to be, they're close enough together that you don't see the buildings, but far enough apart that the branches, you can get ends, because it's only at the ends of the branch that you get flowers, but that means it has to be in the sun. So if the end of the branch goes into another tree, in that area there won't be flowers. So that means they have to be enough apart that there actually is flowers there. Does that make sense? Okay. So that means it's been well planted. There's enough space that they have lots of trees, that means there's a lot, there's plenty of inexhaustible water, that means there's a lot of space inside this city. Huge lakes, right? Huge amount of trees, and so everything's very, very nice. It was here that the illustrious Gotama of rigid vows begat on the Shudra woman Aushinara, the daughter of Ushinara, Kashivat, and other celebrated sons, right? So, we've heard about this Aushinara before? You've heard? Any of you remember from before Manu? Right? She's the example of, you know, that it mentions that a girl can come from anywhere, Like gold can come from any place, a good girl can be taken from any family. The example is giving of her, because she was a Shudra woman. But, it means the family was, but her qualities were such that she was qualified to be the wife of a sage. And also it shows that the nature of the woman will naturally, if the husband behaves properly, the wife will already will naturally follow that. Right? Does that make sense? So she's famous because of this element. That also shows that in the Vedic, that it wasn't birth that was important, it was the qualities. Right? So then when the Pandavas are complaining about what's his name, Karna's birth, they're actually complaining about his qualities. Because he was acting in sometimes more like a Shudra. Right? Because of his attachment, lack of forgiveness, and all these other things, he wasn't able to. So that was that. That the race sprung from Gotama doth yet live under the sway of an ordinary human race of monarchs is only evidence of Gotama's kindness to kings. That the Brahmins live with the kings, work with the kings, it's their kindness. It means these kind of qualified Brahmins. O Arjuna, it was here that in olden times the mighty monarchs of Anga, the Vanga, and other countries came to the abode of Gotama and passed their days in joy and happiness. Behold, O Partha, those forests of delightful peoples and beautiful Lohras standing near the side of Gotama's abode. There dwelt in old days those Nagas, Arvuda and Shakravapin, those persecutors of all enemies, as also the Naga Swastika and that other excellent Naga called Mani. Manu himself had ordered the country of the Magaras to be never afflicted with drought, and Kaushika and Manimat have also favored that country. Owing such a delightful and impregnable city, Jarasandha is ever bent on seeking the fruition of his purposes, unlike other monarchs. We shall, however, by slaying him today, humble his pride. Very good way to humble your pride, so... Be happy you're just washing pots, right? You know, so. Like that. So, yeah. So that's the thing, is sometimes when there's opulence, then there's pride. So that's a sign of advancement if you can have opulence and not be proud. Because right? If there's pride, then we see Krishna takes it away. But if there's opulence and not pride, then Krishna will give you more. Right? So then, if you want wealth, you have to become humble. Right? Isn't it? Does that make sense? So we see in all the big important areas of Dhanam, Janam, and Sundarim, the common element to maintain all of them is humility. Right? Does that make sense? So then if you have it, then that's not your need. So that's the funny point. If you want it, you have to be humble. If you're humble, it's not your need anymore. Right? That's Krishna and his policies. Right? Very clever. Like that. You want this? You can have it. How much you want, but it's not yours. You want to be yours, you don't get any. That's all. It's that simple. Right? So that's why, yes.
Knowledge and beauty are also considered wealth?
Say again?
Knowledge and beauty,
yes. Because the ornament of knowledge is humility. You know someone actually has knowledge if they're humble. Because that knowledge will turn into realization. That becomes then very, very important. Right? Because otherwise, then. Does that make sense? Also, the 20 qualities. The 20 qualities of knowledge, the first one's humility. Also, of women, the most beautiful are ones that their mood is the chastity. So chastity means shyness, right? It's shyness, and shyness is feminine humility. You know what I'm saying? There's no ignorance in it. See, it's also very important to note that humility doesn't mean ignorance. Right? oh, I'm so useless, I'm so this and that, so therefore nothing happens. It just means the knowledge that what my position is. I am fallen, so that's the fact. But it doesn't make me ignorant. So if I'm fallen, what should I do about it? Am I supposed to be fallen? No. So therefore we're supposed to dynamically act to get out of that fallen position. Right? So that's the difference between humility and insecurity. Right? But generally insecurity is taken, that's humility. You know, I can't do, I can't this, I can't do that. But that's because of actually false ego. Insecurity means the ego is there, but something went wrong, so the ego can't act. Does that make sense? So actually shyness, dignity, you know, chastity, these are, would be the qualities seen in beauty, of actual very excellent beauty. But by others who are insecure, they take this as pride. Just because they don't know what a human being is. You know what I'm saying? Therefore, you'll see sometimes the girls are very, you know, shy, well-behaved. They act in a dignified way. And others will say, oh, well, what's her problem? Right? All she's trying to do is act like a human being. But because you're not behaving like a dog, like the person making the criticism, then, therefore, it doesn't match. So that's why you don't mix, right? You know, the saying, birds of a feather flock together. So those who are, have those kind of qualities should stick with those kind. Because the other ones will never understand. And also, as I think it will come up later, we see that when Damayanti is in the forest, she's traveling with some merchants, and they have their elephants that are carrying the merchandise. So those are tamed elephants. So then the whole party is attacked by wild elephants, right? Wild elephants are going to attack because of wealth, right? Wild elephants care about humans? No. Wild elephants can't stand tame elephants, right? So that's a principle. Wild people, people with no culture, no character, can't tolerate people that have. Therefore, they'll always attack them. So it's just something, if you're going to take up this path of becoming cultured, it's just one of the things you got to live with. People will criticize because they can't tolerate. Because if no one does it, then they can comfortably do it. Oh, why are you dressed like this? Everybody dresses like this. Why don't you follow this? Oh, it can't be done now. That's, you know, Vedic. That's so long ago. No one does that anymore. But if people are doing it, means you could do it, means that makes them angry because then their identity is insecure. It's not connected to something solid. Does that make sense? So all the opulences need humility to work. Like we saw before, is that influence or power. If you become angry, you know, then, you know, become pride and these things, then you can lose. So the one who doesn't become angry wins. Right? So your beauty, your wealth, your influence, you know, if you're proud of your wealth, you'll waste it, you'll squander it. You know, influence, power, how you say, renunciation, become proud of it, then it brings out distinction, adoration, and profit. Right? So that pride then will, one will drop from that, the one's renunciation will go. So for Krishna, is even though he's Lord of everything, he takes a humble position. Right? So that's how he acts. So that means anybody who is following him or associating with him will act in the same way. Is that okay? Yeah. So that's actual beauty, is qualities. You know what I'm saying? Physical beauty is there, but it's only a medium. You understand? But the real beauty is the qualities, the character. So someone of not necessarily as, how you say? Develop, how you say, how would you nicely say it means? In other words, the medium of beauty, right? Means there's standard set qualities of it, or symptoms of it. So someone can have more symptoms, but their attitude can be less, and they're not, won't look as beautiful as someone that may have less of the symptoms of beauty, but has better character. Does that make sense? So that means everybody can be beautiful. It's just on their attitude. It's technically nothing to do with the physical. Like that. The physical just allows more of it to be obvious, that's all. You know, it's like if you have a small pipe or a big pipe, they both can move the same thing. But if you have a big pipe and only a little bit of water going through it, what's the meaning? Right. Does that make sense? Yeah? That's something? Or same question. Vaishampayana said, thus saying, those brothers of abundant energy, namely, he of the Vrishni race and the two Pandavas, entered the city of Magadha. Why did he say those brothers? Because only Bhima and Arjuna are brothers?
They're cousins.
They're cousins, so cousins are also called brothers. Right? Because like in India, you say, oh, who's this? Oh, it's my brother. But you have to ask, what kind of brother? You know, they could be, you know, the actual same family brother, or they could be, you know, cousin brothers, or they could be village brothers, or they could be national brothers. Yes, we're both Indians, you know, or, you know, like that. It's just, you know, anything's brothers around here, right? So, but. It could be from the Bronx, yeah? Brothers from the Bronx, okay. Yeah. Like that. Then you also have a sister, right?
Is that the same way that sister is used in describing Devaki and
Kamsa?
Devaki and?
Kamsa. Devaki and Kamsa. No, I think they're actually brother and sister, isn't it? They're cousins. Okay, they're cousins. But you see how close it is that Kamsa's then driving the chariot, because it's, you know, any girl in the family, any boy in the family will take care of. It's very, very strong on this. It's just the Vedic standard is that no girl in any family, if there's a boy in the family, any man in the family, you know, any father, any uncle, any guy, will ever, you know, have any distress. Because they'll always take care. They're very, very strong, you know. And they'll only reduce that then when the girl's married. You know? Like that. But at any time, how you say? Protection is afforded. But if the husband's taken care of, then there's not the need's not there. But that's it's a different kind of mood. You know, there's no exploitation, it's very dutiful and everything like that. But you can see it. I mean, I've seen it. Like that. Even brothers to brothers, the older one takes care of the younger because he's Dada. I've seen a 6-year-old boy, you know, then taking care of his 4-year-old brother. You know, the brother's coming, yeah, this one's bothering me, this one, that. And the older one is, yes, don't worry, I'll take care, I'll do all this and that, I'll talk about it, I'll work it out. And, you know, not just, you know, being, you know, punk, being very mature about it. 6 years old, he's talking as if he was, you know, an adult. Yeah, yeah, don't worry. And then he'll go and take care of it and call the other, you know, 4-year-old punk over and say, why you're bothering my brother, you know, just, you know. Like that. I've seen it. You know, so it goes on. It goes on. Like that. So it's the Vedic concept of family is very, you know, or community, it would have to say, because family is the whole community. It's, yes? How does one become patient? That's a good one. You mean how to bring, you want it done yesterday, at least up to today? Is that what you mean? I think your strongest point would be, your strongest leverage would be the use of satisfaction, probably. You know, does that make sense? It means in the principles that we were talking about is that the situation, the boy, you know, it means his grounding is in sense control. It means everything he wants to accomplish is done due to sense control. Then his method is sensitivity, through the medium of sensitivity, right? Because sense control is there, but that can make you very hard. But he has to be sensitive. Then in that being, you know, so you have to use your intelligence like that in that. So then for the girls, then it is that chastity, right? Because that makes them focused, right? Sense control makes the boy focused, chastity makes the girl focused. Then her medium to use is satisfaction. Does that make sense? And so, therefore, the intelligence is used. If it's coming naturally, that means the mind's already accepted. If not, she's using the intelligence. So that, basically, it's the principle of, it's there, it will happen, you know, everything will be taken care of, the satisfaction that it's going to be done. And but at the same time is, that can't be taken advantage of by the men. You know what I'm saying? The woman is endeavoring to be satisfied. That's her duty. But the man can't sit back and think it's okay, because sitting back is not part of the equation. It doesn't exist in the equation. 2 + 2 = 4 doesn't have 27 in it. Right? It's just how you say? There has to be action. So therefore, the boy is endeavoring the best he can, as quickly as he can, in the most efficient way he can, to get the accomplish, you know, what is needed to be done. And the girl is at the same time trying to be satisfied, you know, and it's moving at the speed that it can. You know what I'm saying? So in other words, both are, you know, in other words, the girl is trying to pull it back from the edge, and the boy is trying to push the edge. That matches. Does that make sense? So he's trying to push it as much as it can, and she's trying to hold it back as much as she can. Right? You know, so, you know, try to pull it from yesterday into today if possible. You know, in other words, she's making the endeavor. It doesn't mean she's successful, but she's trying. Because that's the important thing in the Vedic culture, is the endeavor. Results up to Krishna. If you have the right knowledge, you're making the right endeavor, then according to Krishna, you will get or not get according to how Krishna wants it to unfold. Does that make sense? Right? So that's the method. That combination works very good. Right? So the girls then element is then the whole basis will be on the religious. Right? Is that this is the right thing to do. It's the correct thing to do. That's what they can be very focused in that. Right? That, because from religion comes satisfaction, from religion will come their chastity, right? But for the boy, religion's not enough, because then it has artha and kama connected to it, right? But artha is the realm of the women, right? In other words, opulence is feminine, right? Sense gratification is feminine. So that's them. So that's their natural situation. So the boy has to situate himself in spirituality. Right, his sensitivity will be his religiousness, right? His sense control, but his actual the knowledge has to be based in spirituality, right? Because then that leads, because then from dharma you're going to transcendental. So the transcendental, the intelligence, right? The moksha, the liberation. It's going in that the intelligence leads the mind, right? So that way, then the men lead the women. Right, because they're spiritual. If they're religious, woman's more religious than man. Therefore, who's leading? Right. So who can lead religion other than spiritual? So when the man's spiritual, woman's religious, then it's dynamic. Does that make sense? So then it works. Is that okay? Is that answer? Is there anything left out there? Right. And I guess you could say in the converse for the boy, then it would be his, the patience will come from his sense control and his sensitivity. Because he wants to get something done, but he can only get it done at the speed that the feminine aspect that he's dealing with moves at. So the feminine aspect's moving slow, he has to move slow. If it's moving fast, he has to move fast. Right, if it's changing, then he has to be sensitive and move with that. But by his sense control, and he keeps it, right? You know, just as why is a woman trying to be satisfied? Because he's chaste, right? Because of that, that gives her a focus and everything, doesn't it? Right? The two go back, the two support each other, right? Does that make sense? Okay. Then they approached towards the impregnable city of Girivraja that was full of cheerful and well-fed inhabitants belonging to all the four orders and where festivities were perennial. Right? Why cheerful and well-fed? Anybody's cheerful if they're not well-fed? Have you ever seen a happy, anorexic, good-looking girl? Go ahead. Hit me with one name. Right? No, you can't be. Those who are well fed, they're happy. Remember that. Okay. Also it says, what was that? What was Yudhishthira's, oh, it's coming up. What was his instruction on feeding the Brahmins?
Feed them till they start laughing.
Yes, feed them till they laugh. Right? Because you see, after a big feast, you see the devotees sit around laughing. Because it was a really good feast. You know, it's okay feast, everyone finishes, nice, and then they get up and wash their hands. If it was really good, no one gets up. They sit around and talk and laugh and like that. So if you say feed them till they laugh, that means it had to be really good prasad, served well, you know, how much they want it. Then only people will laugh, right? But if any one of those is missing, then it doesn't happen. Okay? So just by saying feed them till they laugh means everything had to be done right, you know. Unless, of course, you want to be a little artificial, then you have a whole bunch of extra servers there that as soon as they finish, they all come in and start tickling them or something. You know? See, they laughed. Okay. Like that. In any case, you're going to have to make some serious arrangements. You know, so. Okay. Festivities were perennial. So it means always something's going on. Some samskar is going on. Some national festival is going on. Somebody's, you know, just doing something nice, giving in charity. You know, because there's, you can have a festival for anything, right? You know, it's like your day before your birthday, the day of your birthday, the day after your birthday, the day when you can have your birthday, the day when you want your birthday, you know, like that. So I'm saying always there's an opportunity for that, like that. I mean, I'm just saying that as a general topic. I'm not meaning anyone in particular, you know, like that. Okay. On arriving then at the gate of the city, the brothers, instead of passing through it, began to pierce with their staffs the heart of the high Chaitya peak that was worshipped by the race of Vritharatha, and also by the citizens, and which delighted the hearts of all the Magadhas. There, Brihadratha had slain a cannibal called Rishava, and having slain the monster, made of his hide 3 drums which he placed in his own city. Those drums were such that once beaten, their sound lasted 1 month. That's a pretty big drum. That's a pretty big rakshasa, right? You know. The brothers broke down the Chaitra peak that was delightful to all the Magadhas with their staves. Right? You know, and these are the ones worried about Jarasandha. Right? Chaityaka peak that was delightful to all the Magadhas at that point where those drums covered with celestial flowers used to yield their continuous sounds. Desirous of slaying Jarasandha, they seemed by that act of theirs to place their feet upon the head of their foe. Right? In other words, if they were Brahmins, that they'd just walk into the city. They're Kshatriyas, they have to do this stuff, right? They have to, you know, show their prowess, their chivalry, their might, because that's part of the fight, right? Otherwise, you just come in and the fight was nothing. What is it? It didn't mean anything, right? Right? If you have a game, okay, we're going to play a game, and one side against the other, and in 2 seconds you win, you're going to be satisfied?
No, you have to fight for it, you know, the things and this. We're going to beat you, we'll see, you know, this, that, all that kind of stuff. Then it makes it nice, right? And then when you beat them, then it was satisfactory, right? Does that make sense? So they have to, in other words, Krishna is taking this position of, oh, how can we beat him, this and that, just so they can taste the chivalrous rasa. Otherwise, how is Krishna going to taste it, right? No one's equal to him, no one's above him. Chivalry means equal. So therefore, you can't do it. So therefore, only in this fighting spirit. So that amongst the, you know, either it means either here in enemies or in friends or in the conjugal ras, right? That's the only places where you see chivalry. You don't see it anywhere else, right? Master and servant, parent and child, someone who appreciates. There's no chivalry. Right? Chivalry is amongst equals. So therefore, friends, enemies. Or, how you say? The conjugal rasa. That's the only place you can find it. Okay. Attacking with their mighty arms that immovable, huge, high, and old celebrated peak, always worshipped with perfumes and garlands, those heroes broke it down. And with joyful hearts, they entered the city. It so happened that the learned brahmanas residing within the city saw many evil omens, which they reported to Jarasandha. The priest, making the king mount an elephant, whirled high brands above him. King Jarasandha also, possessed of great prowess, lighted brands above him, about him. In other words, he put him on an elephant, you know, which would signify, you know, prowess in that. Then lighted with lamps and all that, then worshipped him. Because when we're offering the lamps, that's Niranjana. Right? It means that it removes all bad elements. So the artik, that offering of the lamp, that's for removing drishti and anything bad that may happen. Just like you see when Krishna comes back in the evening, the Mother Jashoda goes with the lamp and offers, or Krishna comes, the gopis offer. It's out of well-wishing, out of protection. So then, also in the puja, when you do the bathing and that, when you do the special worship, then after he's bathed and he's dressed, then you do Niranjana, like that. So it's part of our artik, what we call artik. That's why, of all the items in the artik, the lamp is actually the most important. Right? So that's why you see very elaborate artiks is more lamps. You don't have 10 different plates of flowers, or many different kinds of incense, but you can have many kinds of lamps. You can have as many lamps as you like. No one will say what's going on. But if you picked up a plate of flowers and then put it down, and then another plate of flowers and put it down, and then another plate of flowers, you start going, hey, you know, what's going on? But if you go through, you know, 4 or 5 different lamps, no one says anything, right? Because that's actually the most important, because it's Niranjana, you know? In other words, things that are nice, things that are pleasant, things that remove evil, you know, it's all different things for the benefit of the other person. Does that make sense? Yes.
Maharaj, what is the week
when we put it on our head? Because it's prashad, right? Just like you know, touch the flower to your head or stuff like that. Hard to touch the lamp directly to your head, so you take your hand over it and then touch it. It's just practical, right? You know, Vedic's very practical. Otherwise, you see the brahmacharis there. You know, I got to do it. You know. You know, like that, you know, they just like dandavats, falling like a stick. So a stick is stiff. So that means I have to fall like this, you know, and after banging their heads many times, oh, I gotta do this. This is surrender, like that. And I'm not joking. I've seen this many, many times, you know. What it means is when you're on the ground, you look like a stick. Not that what the process from standing to there is like a stick. But they do, it's just like, you know, a timber, like that, you know, like that. But it's, you know, there's a kind of sincerity there, you know. I'm sure Krishna is amused because the Indians don't do it, right? Only those from the Malecha and Yavana backgrounds try these things, you know, so they must be quite amused, like Prabhupada was saying. Prabhupada, they were at Rath Yatra, and all the devotees were dancing and all that. And Prabhupada was laughing, and someone asked him, why are you laughing? He says, because Narad Muni's here. He came to see all the Malechas dance. You know, he's amused at how they're dancing and everything, and what they do, you know, because they do funny, funny stuff. You know. Actually, I should say, we do funny, funny stuff. So, yeah. Yes?
I heard a story in Australia. There was a disciple of Prabhupada who did that.
Yeah. He laughed. Yeah, it's funny because it's sincere. They're trying to please Krishna. They think this is surrender, but you know, because the more difficult it is, the more hard, the more devotion. From one sense, it is, but austerity is performing your duties, you know, rather than just it has to be physically difficult or you know stuff like that. You know, so but those things are seen as sincere and nice, but you know, not really that important, but, you know, whatever. Okay, so now we'll see what happens after Jarasandha's Artik. Today's what day? Thursday. Okay, yeah, then tomorrow.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jainatai Gaura Premanandi. That om in the beginning is so that we all chant the same note, right? I mean, because we don't, Hare Krishna doesn't need an om, it doesn't need a beat syllable, but we just chant it so that everyone will chant the same note, like that, so that knowing that, one should make that, you know, I say endeavor. Be very, very much appreciated.